not a problem. He can sit over there too. All right. So in our study of Parsha of Amalek, we're going to do a number of segues. We started last week with a lot of questions. We read through the opening of the Perek. We read through the... We addressed, or at least raised, put on the table, some of the moral questions related to Amalek, moral questions related to the overall mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, which we're going to begin to address tonight, the specific moral question of why now? So we talked a little bit about the requirement of Malchus and the prerequisite of establishing Malchut Yisrael before engaging with Amalek, but that still doesn't answer the question as to why now completely, because Shaul's had quite a number of years as Melech before he's been instructed to engage Amalek. So the question of why now, the question of why formulated in this fashion of Mi'ish v'yad Yishar, Mi'olel v'yad Yonek, Mi'shor v'yad Semich, why elaborate to such detail on the breadth of this requirement. And then we spend some time talking about Shaul from the other side of things, the perception, and the, I would call it a misperception, that the reason why Shaul doesn't fulfill the mandate as given to him is because he felt it was immoral, and that he's sympathetic to the morality question of how do you go and annihilate me ish v'yad yishar, mi'olel v'yad yonek, mi'shor v'yad seh.
Are you asking or are you stating that that's the reason that...
That seems to be... We don't know why he doesn't respond. All we know is that Shmuel says to him, lo tachmol, right, not to have compassion. And the pasuk that describes the chet says, Vayachmol Shaul va'am al Amalek ve'al metavatzon. Shaul and the people had compassion over Agag and the... Vayachmol Shaul va'am al Agag ve'al metavatzon. They had compassion for Agag and the Metzon.
Where is that in the Tanakh?
That's in Tanakh. That's in pasuk.
Oh, okay. So he came back with...
Tet. Vayachmol Shaul va'am al Agag ve'al metavatzon. What it says. And that suggested to us that maybe, and then we saw Midrashei Chazal to that effect, that on the one hand, or that seemed to reflect the notion that Shaul's driven by this moral compassion, that he's uncomfortable with the command that Shmuel gives him. That same Medrash, and I'm just doing a quick review, that same Medrash that points to the compassion of Shaul over Agag and Metzavatzon, which applies the verse Alti Tzadikarbe, concludes that if you don't follow the commands that God sets out, the result is Alti Sharbe, the result is going to be that you're going to make similar mistakes elsewhere. And therefore we looked at the story, which appears not too far in the future, of the war with Nov. And when Shaul engages with the city of Nov Yerachonim, it doesn't just wipe out all of the 85 Kohanim because they harbored David, but he goes out of his way to destroy the entire city of Nov, and there the pasuk states explicitly that he destroyed the city of Nov, mi'ish v'yadisha, mi'olel v'yadyonek, mi'shor v'yadseh. The exact same language used to describe the command to Shmuel regarding Amalek is used to describe the cruelty of Shaul with regards to Nov Yerachonim. And Chazal are the ones to point that out. So the argument that Chazal saw in Shmuel a kind of compassionate, expression in the military, conscientious objector to the command of Shmuel, is complicated by the fact that there's a dark side to Shmuel, there always has been a dark side to Shaul, there always has been a dark side to Shaul. We saw it by Yonatan, we saw it in the Battle of Michmas, we'll see it in his destruction of Givon and the Givonim, al Shaul ve'al Beit Adamim al Amitamat Givonim, Amitat Givonim, and we saw it certainly by Nov Yerachonim. So that only complicates the question, what did Shaul do wrong, and why? What was he motivated by? So all of those are the questions we raised last week. We parked them on the side, and we said we're going to eventually come back to them. Okay? Part one. Part two. In order to address the issue of Sha'ul and Amalek, I want to do two segues. Segue number one is to go back to the story of Amalek and Chumash and look at the context of the parsha of Amalek in Chumash, including the mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek in, as it appears in Sefer Shemot and in Sefer Devarim, to understand the perspective of the Torah on Mechiyat Amalek and what it means. Segue number one. I'm going to sort of outline where we're going to go. That'll take us probably two shiurim. Segue number two is to come back to something which on the Monday morning shiur I discussed at greater length in the context of our study of Sefer Yehoshua, but I want to come back to, and for us it'll be sort of our main point, the question of what the language of eradicating Amalek means. When the Torah says to Mechad Zecher Amalek, what's the intent? When Shmuel says to Shaul to destroy Amalek, Mishmi Adisham Yalavi Adyonek, what does that mean? And did, what was the intentional context of that command, comparable to other instances where we find the Torah using such language with regard to the war of the seven nations of Canaan? Not to let anybody remain alive, and all of those that language related to quote unquote eradication, what does that mean? So that itself is a shiur or two to talk about the annihilation of a population, or at least the way the Torah presents the notion of a war with the Shiva Amekna. That's segment number two. Then part three, which at that point will be part four, is to come back to the story of Shaul and to look at what actually took place. What was the, given this information, what was the expectation of Shaul? What did he actually do? And for that we're going to have to go back to a close reading of the text itself and the story as it unfolds. What was Shmuel's critique of him? And in the end, address one of the big mysteries of the question, which is that assuming that Shaul was told to annihilate every last member of the people of Amalek, including women and children, and that he was told to destroy all of the cattle and animals, and he had compassion over Agag and had compassion over the Tzon, and that was his chait as it seems to be read. There are two mysteries that we will eventually have to resolve. Mystery number one is if the chait was that he did not destroy Agag and he did not destroy the animals, Shmuel comes along and he kills Agag, but he doesn't touch the animals. So if the issue was that he was supposed to destroy the Agag and the animals, why does Shmuel address the Agag question, doesn't discuss the animals at all? Just kind of leaves them. Issue number two in the story, if Shaul destroyed every last member of the people of Amalek save Agag, how is it that less than 2 years later, when we get to the end of the story of Shmuel Aleph and David HaMelech, David is fighting an army of Amalek in the thousands? Because there are 400 survivors at the end of 2 days of battle. Clearly there were thousands of soldiers. Those are the two big textual mysteries in the story, and we'll have to address them as well. That's the outline for the unit on Amalek, which will take us certainly due to Pesach, maybe a little bit past. Not a worry. All right. So that's what we're up to. We're going to go back to Parsha of Amalek in Chumash. Today and next week, our address is to Chumash. So let's come to Amalek. Amalek appears in several places in Chumash, but in particular, most directly in two places, one in Sefer Shemot, where the events unfold, and the other in Parashat Ki Tetzeh in Dvarim, where the events are retold. That wasn't designed to rhyme, but okay. Shemot Perek Yud Zayin. Shmuel Perek Yitzayim. We're going to read the whole Perek. And overall, our focus is to try to understand the nature of Amalek's chait. That's essentially what today's shiur is about, to try to begin to understand what is the nature of chait Amalek. So Amalek starts in Pasuk Chet. V'yavo Amalek v'yilachem et miso b'refidim. Amalek came. Everybody have it? Shmot Perek Yizayin? Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. But can't start there, because that would not be fair. We really need to start a few psukim earlier, so we're going to start from the beginning of the parak. Vayisu kol adat b'nei Yisrael mimidbar sin l'maseihem opi Hashem vayachanu b'refidim ve'ein mayim lishtot ta'am. To get to Rephidim, we have to understand that we get to Rephidim from Midbar Sinai, as B'nai Yisrael, or Midbar Sin, more correctly. As B'nai Yisrael are traveling from Kriyat Yamsuf. It's a number of stops along the way. We have the story of the man in the previous parak. And they get to the area of Midbar Sin, or so they get to the area of Rephidim, and there, Ein Mayim Lishtot, there's no water. Vayarev Ha'am Im Moshe. The term Vayarev appears in Chumash many times, just happens to be that it's the same word used in the story of Amalek, Vayarev Benachal, we talked about last week. Vayarev Ami Moshe, Vayomru Tznu Lanu Mayim V'nishte. They complained. There's no water. Who do you complain to? The boss. The boss, only in this case they think the boss is Moshe, but he's really not. Vayomru Lehem Moshe, Matri Vunim Adi. What are you fighting with me for? Matinasun et Hashem. Why are you
testing
God, fighting with God? In other words, we don't know what the complaint was or how it was articulated, but Moshe's response to it was not overly tolerant or compassionate. He called it a complaint, a testing of God. He saw in their complaint a more fundamental underlining issue. The people thirsted for water. They complained to Moshe. Those two things went hand in hand. Now we have a sense of the complaint. Why did you take me out of Egypt to kill me and my sons and my children, my cattle, in my thirst? Right? Took us out of Mitzrayim so we could die in the desert. What was the chachma there? Vayitzak Moshe el Hashem lemor. So the people cried to Moshe. Moshe called out to God. Ma esel amaze od ma'at skaluni. What am I going to do with these people? They are on the verge of stoning me. Vayomer Hashem o Moshe avor lifne ha'am. Moshe, go pass before the people, take with you from the elders of Israel, and your staff with which you smote the Yaor, take with you as you go. So, break this verse down. Rashi, the beautiful comment of Rashi, very powerful comment of Rashi on the phrase, Avo lifnei ha'am. Shem says to Moshe, first of all, let me teach you not to speak Lashon Hara about my people. Go avo lifnei ha'am and see if they're going to stone you. So as far as od ma'atu skaluni, Moshe, go walk before the people. Let's see. In other words, Moshe has to be taught that hyperbole of B'nai Yisrael is an old Jewish practice. And they say many things, but they don't really mean it. So
Moshe does not come out looking good here. It sounds like Yisrael asked for water, and he says no, and then they start getting thirsty, and they really cause any problems. Like, why doesn't he pray beforehand?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that the prayer is about water. The prayer is about the complaints of the people. Wait,
that's what I'm saying, is that Moshe does not come out with a good bit. He doesn't ask for water.
Okay.
You know, two psukim beforehand.
Maybe. That's possible. But I okay. There's a side there, too, of critique to Moshe. But certainly in terms of Avolif Ne'am, Rashi's point is that he accused the people of trying to stone him. Hashem says, be careful what you accuse Bnei Israel of. V'kach me'itcha me'ziknei Israel. Take of the elders. Now, the elders of Israel are important here. Why are the elders important? Because Moshe is going to... We know the end of the story, right? Moshe is going to hit the rock and out is going to come water. But Moshe is going to hit the rock not where the people are encamped. He's going to hit the rock somewhere else. So he needs the Ziknei Yisrael. What does he need the Ziknei Yisrael for?
Witnesses.
He needs them. So he's going to kach itcha mezikne Yisrael, and umatcha kshekita boyeta or kach biyadcha, and take the staff. Now, the pshat of why he says avolif ne'am, leaving for aside for a moment the Rashi's comment about the lashon hara. What's the pshat of why? The simple reason is why he has to go before the people.
To get this kenyan.
Partially to get this kenyan, but also to demonstrate to the people that he's taking this kenyan. In other words, Moshe doesn't just disappear with this kenyan to go and find water. Moshe demonstratively says to the people, I am taking this kenyan. I'm taking the mateh. You see the mateh that we used in Mitzrayim? Mm-hmm. Right? This mateh and these kenyan, they're coming with me. You're going to get water. A very public demonstration of the entourage with which Moshe went to get water. Hineni omed lefanecha sham al atzur bechorev. I'm going to stand with you by the tzur in Chorev, by the rock in Chorev. Where is Chorev?
Har Sinai.
They haven't gotten to Har Sinai yet. It's ahead. It's ahead. So Moshe is going to take this canyon. He's going to run ahead, approximately a day's journey, and there he's going to bring water. Vihikita Batsur. Hit the rock. Remember, this rock is not in the camp. This rock is, they don't see this rock. This rock, the only people who are going to see this rock are Moshe and this Kenim. V'yatzu mimenu mayim. And from this rock is going to come forth water. V'shatahaam. Enough for the people to drink. V'yas ken Moshe le'enei ziknei Yisrael. It's very clear that this Moshe is together with this Kenim on Har Chorev in the Tzur. Nikrat Tzur, the famous story of the cleft of the rock where Moshe saw the vision of the Midot HaRachamim. Nikrat Tzur, there's a Tzur, this rock, this area, this cave in Har Chorev. Coming back to Bnei Yisrael, V'yikra Shem HaMakom Masa U'Meriva, Al Riv Bnei Yisrael V'Al Nasotam At Hashem Lemor Hayesh Hashem B'Kirbenu Im Ayin. Place was called Masa Meriva for the fight that they had with God, and because they tested God, asking, is God with us or not? Is there a God amongst us or not? So just visually to get a picture of the story, Israel, here is Sinai, also known as Horeb, okay? Not quite sure it's a mountain as much as a hill. That's a separate issue. Right? There's a long journey in the Midbar. Bnei Yisrael are here at Rifidim, which they end up calling Masa Umeriva. Moshe takes this Kenim and the Mateh ahead, a day's journey. How I know it's a day's journey, I'll show you in a minute. And he goes to Chorev to find water. In the meantime, what's going on here? Here's Bnei Yisrael. what's going on here? Nothing. They're sitting there waiting for Moshe to come back. Moshe takes the Zignei Ha'am, he takes the Mateh, and he goes visiting Har Cholev, hits the rock, boom, out comes water.
But the obvious question is, why is he doing a day's journey away from where the people are?
Because the rock is in Har Sinai.
But why
the rock is in Cholev?
But then how does it help them? They're still thirsty for
another 2 days. The water. Right? How
it's
much water comes forth
from the
correct? How much water comes from this rock?
A river.
Yeah. That flows all the way to where they
correct.
Are.
That's exactly what it says.
They didn't have to travel to where the
No. On the contrary. It says very clearly.
Out of this rock flows water. And now you have a river that flows down to Rephidim. And now I have water. Lots of it.
Now they can drink. Much like by the man, when they asked for bread, when they asked for food, and they got lots of it. Or they asked for meat, and they got lots of it. They asked for water, they got lots of it. You want to doubt God? Here's a staff, here's a rock. Day's journey, and suddenly the entire desert is filled with a flowing river. It's a beautiful story. Fine? Everybody with me? Pasuk Chet. Vayavo Amalek vayilachem im Yisrael b'Rephidim. Amalek comes to fight Israel in Rephidim. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua. Now listen carefully to what goes on here, because this is very important for us to understand. Just the factual information, because we often there's often a misread of the story. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, b'char lanu anashim, v'tzehi lachem ba'amalek. Go take people. Right? It says to Yehoshua, go take people, go and fight with Amalek. Go take soldiers and defend Israel. Amalek came to fight Israel. They're fighting against Israel in Rephidim. Moshe turns to Yeshua and he says to him, go, say, Yilachem b'Amalek, b'char lanu anashim, go find an army and soldiers and go fight Amalek. Machar, anochi nitzav arosh ha-giv'ah, u'mateh alokim b'yadi. Tomorrow I'll be at the top of the hill with the staff.
Hill?
No, as I assume is somewhere visual for Bnei Yisrael to see. Except that there's one word here that's really important.
Machar.
Moshe says to Yeshua, go find people, go find warriors, go fight Amalek. Umachar anochi nitzav arosh ha-givah. Why does Moshe say machar? It's a word that we miss every time we read this parak. Why does Moshe say machar?
Malek is free to fight.
Right. In the meantime, without remember, the whole war is fought because Moshe is lifting up the staff into the heavens. Right? The staff is what fights this war for us. So Moshe lifts up the staff. Vayas Yeshua kasher malo Moshe yilachem b'Amalek. Yeshua did what Hashem Moshe told him to do, go to war against Amalek. Moshe Aaron v'chur alu rosh ha-givah. Moshe Aaron v'chur went to the top of the givah. Vaya kasher yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael v'chasher yaniach yado v'gavar Amalek. When Moshe lifted up his hands, Israel was victorious. When he put down his hands, Amalek was victorious. Meaning, who won this war for them? Yeshua is fighting on the battlefield, and who won this war? You could say Hashem if you want to be theological about it, right? You want to be textual about it. Who is the hero of this battle? Moshe. Careful.
Yeshua.
Careful.
Aaron.
Not Moshe, not Aaron, not Chur, not
the
Yeshua.
Staff.
The staff. The victor in this war is the staff. Moshe says, Machar ani Machar anochi nitzav arosh ha-givah, u'mateh ha-elokim b'yadi. Moshe, Kasher Yarim, Moshe Yado, V'Gavar Yisrael, V'Chashe Yaniach Yado, V'Gavar Amalek. Who's the hero of the battle? Why do I care when Moshe's hands are in the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah that says, right, V'Chi Yadav She Moshe Sot Mechama, does Moshe's hands make war? Does Moshe's hands vanquish? Right? What's the story with his hands? Gemara says beautifully, Mishnah, very beautiful Mishnah, that b'sha'ash Yisrael mistaklin klapei malu mishabdim et libam lavim shebashamayim, when they would look to the heavens and they would... Okay, it's very nice in the Midrash context. In the pshat of it, why were they victorious when Moshe's hands went up? Because the staff went up. The same mateh elokim that Moshe took to Har Chorev to bring the water is the same mateh that he's using to be victorious over Amalek. What magic this staff has, it's a separate discussion. But clearly his hands holding the staff are critical to the victory. Not only that, Moshe can't hold his hands up all day long, right? That's very tiring, so he had to sit in the Aaron Vachut Yadab, Mizeachad, Vayu Yadab Emuna Ad Ba'ashamash. His hands were held by Aaron and Hur until the sunset. It was important that his hands be held high. Vayachalosh Yoshua Atamalek Vetamo Lefi Charev. Yoshua, this is another very important phrase, Yoshua, Echalosh. Vayachalosh means weakened them. This war does not end in victory. It ends in stalemate. Yeah. Much as the war with the Plishtim ended when Shaul went to Limkoma and the Plishtim went Limkomam. Right? It ends in a stalemate. And therefore, because it ends in a stalemate, go and tell Yeshua and the people to write this down as a remembrance for the future, I am going to obliterate the memory of Amalek from under the heavens. One day, you will have the opportunity to revisit this war, and
can I ask a question? Is Hul Miriam's son? Hur
is Miriam's... Does it say Chorus?
We don't have, we don't have explicitly. It's Bezalel's grandfather who doesn't have explicitly in the text.
Salah ben Or ben Chor, right.
And is Kalev ben Chetzron's son in Dere Yamin.
Okay.
And then you have to do the Midrashim and Dere Yamin to get that to Miriam and Kalev ben Yefuneh. But basically...
Mm.
If you read Rashi
Rashi Rashi,
it's Miriam's son.
Okay. Hand against the throne of God. War, which is a language of an oath. Right? Take an oath by the throne of God. Kiyad al kes ka. God's war against Amalek is an eternal one. Milchamal Hashem ba'Amalek midor dor. Why, we'll come back to in a few minutes. But I want to answer the question of Machar. Why is Moshe's instruction to Yeshua, Tzei, Machar lanu anashim, Tzei lachem b'amalek, Machar anochi omed arosh giva, umatei lukim biyadi. Knowing, so he has to know, that this war is going to be fought with the battle, with the mateh, because that's why he says to him, I'm going to take the mateh and stand by arosh giva. Why does he wait till tomorrow?
Maybe because that's when Bnei Yisrael would actually realize that they need Hashem in this war. And
okay, and in the meantime?
Yeah, but Yeshua needed time to gather an army. He can't do it instantaneously.
So the battle begins tomorrow. And in the meantime?
In the meantime, they take losses.
Amalek v'yilachem b'lefidim. So Amalek surprise attacks, and we're unprepared. And we therefore suffer a day of losses before we're able to mount a counteroffensive. That gets lost in Sefer Shmos. In Sefer Devarim, we'll see it very clearly. But it gets lost in Sefer Shmos that there's a day between the initial attack and the counteroffensive.
Another question, though, could be raised from what you're saying. That if it's all dependent upon the staff, why didn't Moshe just act alone? why did he need an army to make it seem as though it was a natural war?
So we actually talked, the relationship between Nes and Teva is a complicated philosophical issue. We've talked about that a little bit with Yitzhak Mitzrayim and the Nisim of Kriyat Yamsuf. Nisim never act in a vacuum. They always act through some kind of natural context. So you can't just pick up the staff and Lord of the Rings style, wave it and the whole army goes flying away. Right? It doesn't quite work that way. Even Kriyat Yamsuf, it didn't work that way. Kriyat Yamsuf was all night long with the east wind. But what's interesting to me is that Moshe doesn't say to him, "Say b'char lanu anashim v'ani omer l'rosh hagibah." He says, "Machar anachi omer l'rosh hagibah." Tomorrow. And in the meantime, he's going to let Amalek have the day?
It's probably has to do with the fact that the two stories are juxtaposed, and
correct.
This is a punishment for their.
So there is a punishment concept. There is a punishment concept, and we're going to see that, but I'm not sure that Moshe would intentionally inflict such a punishment on Bnei Israel. The Mefarshim certainly see this. The whole war with Amalek is a punishment. We'll see
or
that momentarily.
He's still at Har Sinai, and he has to come back to redeem.
Moshe is here. Moshe v'ziknei Yisrael are here. Vayava Amalek v'yilachem im Yisrael b'refidim. That's the optical illusion that we miss in this story. These two stories are juxtaposed to each other because they're happening one in consequence of the other. Moshe is here al atzur b'chorev. That's a day's journey minimal. I said it was a day's journey because of the phrase machar. It takes him a day to get back there. I assume it takes Yeshua a day to get back there too. Because where is Yeshua? Yeshua never moves from Moshe's right hand. So Vayilachem Yisrael b'refidim turns Moshe to Yeshua and says, go. Machar lanu anashim v'tzei. Yilachem b'amalek. Get back as soon as you can. Fight Amalek. And I will come with Aaron and Hur. It may take him a little bit longer to get there because he's a little bit older, right? We'll get to Rosh HaGiv'ah, and with Matei Elokim B'yadei. In the meantime, Matei Elokim is where?
Moshe's here.
In Har Chored. And in that 24 hours, what's going to happen? Until Moshe, Yeshua, Aaron, and Hur get back to the people, what's going to happen?
Amalek's going to give them a hard time.
Vayavo Amalek, Yilachem b'refidim. We don't know what transpired in this battle in those 24 hours. We can conjecture. There's no Moshe, there's no Aaron, there's no Zkenim, there's no Yeshua, there's no army. And a group of Bedouin tribes, nomadic tribes, called Amalek, come and attack. A defenseless people, no leaders. Because all the leaders, what did Moshe take to Har Chorev? Moshe, Ziknei Yisrael, and the Mateh. All the leadership and weapons of war have all gone to Chorev. And the people are left defenseless.
Wouldn't that be a little irresponsible of Moshe as a leader to leave the entire nation?
Moshe doesn't do it on his own instruction. Moshe does it by God's instruction. Correct?
Do that.
Oh, so now you understand why Chazal saw in the war with Amalek a terrible punishment for their masa'om riva and for their testing God. Hayesh Elokim b'kirbeinu imayin. You want to test whether God's really there? Okay, here's a nation called Amalek, and I'll go see him. Hayesh Elokim b'kirbeinu imayin. But until Moshe gets back with Mateh Elokim b'yado, in the meantime, Amalek has free reign for a day. Think of the initial attack of the Yom Kippur War. Until we were able to regroup and reorient ourselves and be able to launch a counteroffensive in that initial attack, which was a surprise attack, the Amalek of the moment, which was in that time Syria, had free reign. And the losses we took in the opening days of the Yom Kippur War were terrible. That's the story of Amalek as it appears in Sefer Shmos. Okay? Now we turn to Devarim.
end of Parashat Ki Tetzé. We find three psukim which we're going to read a week from Shabbos.
What part?
End of Perek Chof He. Pasuk Yitzayin Yitchet and Yitet. Zachorat Asher Asal Lecha Amalek B'derech B'tzeitchem Mimitzrayim. This is 40 years later. Moshe is speaking to Bnei Yisrael before he dies. Last messages, and he says to them, Zachorat Asher Salacha Amalek. Let's not forget Amalek. Now, Bnei Yisrael are not going to forget Amalek. They remember Amalek very well. There are several places where Amalek is mentioned in between. There's the Parsha of the Meraglim, where they come back and they report that Amalek is in the Negev, and therefore they're afraid of attacking that way. There are a few references along the way, but Amalek is there in the background. Zachorat asher asal lecha Amalek baderech b'tzeitchem mimitzrayim. Asher karcha baderech. Asher karcha baderech means literally who happened upon you or who met you along the way. Happened to meet you, happened to greet you, happened to be there. I don't think there was anything happenstance about the war with Amalek, but it says Asher karcha baderech. Vayizanev becha kol hanechashalim acharecha, and who attacked the stragglers, right? Vayizanev, from the word zanev, attacked from behind, all of the weak, all of the ones who couldn't keep up, all the ones who couldn't manage, nechlash. You were tired, you were weary. We'll talk about the phrase Le'yarei Elokim and what it means in the Machloket Mefarshim and the Machloket Midrashim as to whom the phrase Le'yarei Elokim refers. Does it refer to Amalek? Does it refer to Bnei Israel? If we get there today, hopefully. If not, next week. V'aya B'aniach Hashem Elokecha Mikol Oyvecha Misaviv. God will finish dealing with all of the other enemies around you. After you're all done dealing with all of the other enemies, then you have an old score to settle. Then you will obliterate Amalek from under the heavens. Do not forget Amalek. That's the Parsha of Zachor.
Is Amalek a general term, or is it a specific people?
In Tanakh, it is undoubtedly a specific people. There's no question. Later in philosophy, and theologists and philosophers, and in the aftermath of the Gemara we learned last week about Basa and Cheriv, who were Bela Ta'omot, so the genealogical identity of the biblical nations are gone. So we can transform Amalek into all kinds of thought processes and identities. But in Tanakh, nothing doing. In Tanakh, Amalek is a tribe, descendant of Esav. We know exactly who their lineage is. We know where they come from. We know where they live. We know how many times they attack us in history. In the days of Gidon, and the days of Shaul, and the days of David. We have scores to settle with Amalek over the years. All right. So I'm going to cheat and give you the chart. Well, before I do that, let's see if we can figure this out on the run. Since we're a small group, let's have some fun with it. If you can, open up both prakim at the same time and keep them in front of you so you can glance back and forth between them. Two parashiyot that deal with Amalek. There are very different perspectives in these two parashiyot. Almost to the point of contradiction. Almost. We're going to have to resolve the contradiction. But what are the differences that emerge right off the page? when we look at these two chapters? What are the obvious differences in the way the story is presented in Sefer Shemot and the way the story is presented in Sefer Devarim? To the point of almost a steer between.
The first one that bugs me is that in Devarim it says Amalek attacked from behind, which means something like Bnei Israel is moving somewhere and there are stragglers.
Correct.
Whereas in Shemot, they're not moving anymore. They're sitting in Rephidim, and there's no stragglers.
Ve'avo Amalek v'yilachem v'Rephidim. Amalek came to Israel and fought them in Rephidim. Whereas Vayizanebach Hakol Nechashlim Macharecha sounds like they're kind of stealing from behind, and every time a stray Israelite veers from the camp, they grab them. A very different perspective. There's another phrase here that fits into that contradiction very neatly. Okay, Vayavo Amalek Vayilachem Berefidim. They've waged war. So Vayilachem is different from Vayizanev. That's what you're pointing out. To wage war directly, frontally, say, V'chalanu Anashim. What does Hashem say to, what does Moshe say to Yeshua? V'chalan onashim b'tzei ilachem ba'amalek. Second time that phrase is used. This is all at war. It sounds like they're ambushing, standing, waiting in the hills, waiting for an Israelite to be loose and missed from the rest of the camp and pounce. No war, no battle. Okay. There's another phrase here that is also important to point out. Asher kar chabadah. What does Asher Kar Chabadarach mean? Asher Kar Chabadarach.
Well, it comes from the word koreh. It's like it happened
right.
That way.
There's a medrash about it comes from the word kar, but that's not the pshat of it. The pshat of it is it means that they happened to come upon you, and they saw a couple of stragglers, and they pounced on them. Asher Kar Chabadarach.
But in B'shalach, it looks like they purposefully came to seek you out, to fight you.
Vayavo Amalek v'yilachem b'refidim. This was no happenstance greeting. This was Vayavo Amalek v'yilachem b'refidim. So that's another problem in this picture. Okay? What else?
You're going to miss the whole counterattack.
Correct. So in B'shalach, what do I have? I have a counter. Say Lachem Amalek. I have Yoshua. I have Moshe. I have the Mateh. I have the battle. Right? That whole counter offensive is not reflected here at all. Zechor Asher Asal Lacha Amalek. All I have to remember is what Amalek did to you. The battle is irrelevant. There's no reference to the battle at all. All there is a description of the atah. What response did you have in Shmos, the response was Yoshua and an army and Milachem Bamalek and Moshe on the mountaintop. That's what the response was. In Shmos, in Dvarim, the only response that I have is Yata, Ayif, Yagin. You were too tired to do anything about it. Okay? Very different picture. What else?
In your vision, in B'shalach, the end result in B'shalach is that Kimocho Emcha, that Hashem's going to wipe out
the first of all, K'tov Zot Zikaron Basefer, the symbol is Ne Yoshua. First time I have a whole reference to writing in a Sefer. K'tov Zot Zikaron Basefer, the symbol is Ne Yoshua. There's no reference in Parshat Kitetze to anything written in any kind of sefer.
And it doesn't say when either in B'shalach. just says Hashem will wipe out their memory.
Well, we're going to get them. And then after you write it down, it says, Macho emche et zecher Amalek mitachat Hashem. Which of course means, Macho emche means,
I meaning Hashem.
God. And this is the follow-up verse. Ki yad al keska milchama la Hashem ba'amalek midodo. This is God's battle against Amalek. God will smite Amalek. God will destroy Amalek. Which would explain why. What is our role in that battlefield between God and Amalek? What are we supposed to do here in Sefer Shmos? Here's the war. Okay? Part one, war. Part two, counteroffensive. Amalek, ata. Part three, response. The response here is God will destroy Amalek. Amalek. It's God's battle by God's throne. It's God's battle against Amalek. What is man supposed to do? What are we supposed to do?
Nothing.
That doesn't say nothing.
Fight.
No. What are we supposed to do here in Shmos?
Write it down.
Write it down. Record the story for posterity. Why? So that when God comes to fight Amalek, we can pull out the sefer and say, "You see, God promised He would destroy Amalek. He did." Much like the Nevi'im. Sifrei Nevi'im were written for what purpose? So that when the Nevuot come true, we can come back to the Nevi'im and say, oh, you see, the Nevi'im promised. They promised Shiva Tzion. Look, it's written. Shteit Geshribin. It's written in the text of the Nevi'im. You see, it's happening. So therefore, K'tov Zot Zikaron B'Sefer V'Simbo Znei Yoshua. Write this down. So that what? So that we know that when Muhammad Hashem Bamalek, when God will take care of Amalek sometime in the future, we have it written down and recorded that this is what God promised He would do. Clear? Till we get to Parsha Zachar. Zachar! First of all, there's an imperative. Zachar Tashir Asa. And now, we'll take it further. Now, take it from the beginning. Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek b'derech b'tzidchem b'mitzrayim. Against whom was the chet of Amalek? Ask the question that way. Against whom was the crime?
God.
Here it's clear. Lechama l'Hashem b'Amalek midor ador. They came and attacked God's people. God, the Mateh, representing God's hand, would fight the battle. There would be another day to fight to finish this battle. It would be God's battle then, it will be God's battle in the future. Milchama l'Hashem b'Amalek. If you ask the question against whom was the chet, and therefore to whom has the responsibility of avenging the chet, the answer is God. Now you read Dvarim that says Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. Amalek's crime was against
the people.
Asher kocha b'derech. They had no business with you. We'll see what kind of business they had in a minute. They attacked stragglers, they attacked the weak, they attacked the defenseless, they attacked the women and children. How dare they? It's immoral. It's immoral. And you, right? You have no strength, and they even defend yourselves. I'm going to come back to that phrase. To whom it applies. And therefore, I command you, what's the therefore?
You call Ivecha Misaviv, when God gives you respite from all your enemies, when you finish taking care of all your other enemies in the land of Israel, then don't forget that you have an unfinished score with Amalek. Timcha et Zecher Amalek itachat hashamayim lo tishkach. Timcha, you will destroy. So if you had this parasha right here, and all you saw were these words, besides trying to decipher my handwriting, you would say, against whom was the chait of Amalek?
Israel.
What kind of chait was it? What was the nature of their crime here?
Picked on the weak ones.
Picked on the weak ones. What we call in today's parlance, they fought the non-combatants. They fought the women and children, the stragglers, the innocent, the people who couldn't defend themselves. There's a term for it in today's terminology. What do we call that today in today's terminology? In today's political terminology, when you attack the weak and the defenseless rather than attacking the army.
Collateral damage.
Collateral damage. We call it terrorism.
Right.
This is not collateral damage. This is intentional. This is the nature of their crime. They attacked you for no reason, right? They attacked you, the weak, the stragglers, the defenseless, they came from behind, they stabbed you in the back. You had no way of defending yourself. Come back to that phrase momentarily. You have a score to settle with them. And you have a responsibility to settle that score. Do not forget. Remember, you're fighting all your other enemies. You've got to deal with Moab and with Ammon and the Canaanites and the Plishtim and the this, that, and that. There are all kinds of groups in the land of Israel that they're going to have to deal with. And when they're all done, you've dealt with Moab and you've dealt with Ammon, you've dealt with Edom and you've dealt with this one, you've dealt with that one, you've done. Lot Ishkach, you have a score to settle. And the score is with Ammon. That's in Devarim.
Actually, they won't let you forget.
Well, it doesn't say that. And that's interesting. It doesn't say that, right? It doesn't say that they won't let you forget. It says that you have the responsibility not to forget. This is part of the problem. Whereas in Shmos, Amalek came and fought against us. Now, if I didn't have anything here, if I had nothing here, and all I had was the story as the first half of this perek and the sentence "Vayavam Amalek v'yilachem b'refidim," and I were to ask you, why did a group of nomadic tribes, Bedouin tribes who live in the desert, why did they come and attack Israel in Refidim? It was an intentional attack. It wasn't they happened to come across you. They happened to meet you. Oh, there's Israelite on the other side of the hill. Let's go attack. Vayavam Amalek. They came, and they waged war with us. Why?
They want the water.
Water. Simple. There's no water in the desert. Everybody else is dying of thirst. Who's got water?
It's a new river.
There's a new river here. There's a new river. It was created by Moshe, Bnei Yisrael, and the Ziknei Am. The river, whether it flows through the desert or it flows under the desert, we have no way of knowing. All we know is, V'shatam, the people are drinking water. There's a bear. There's water. Next sentence. V'yavo Amalek, V'ylachem b'refidim. Israel came to fight. No surprise. The problem is, whose water is it? Is it Bnei Yisrael's water? Where did the water come from? Whose water? To whom does this water belong?
God.
It's God's water. It came from the Tzor and Chareb. It came with the Mateh Elohim. How dare Amalek go and attack God's water? So God, Moshe, will take the staff, the very Mateh that brought this water forth, and he will stand by Rosh HaGivah, and he will fight Amalek. He needs a couple of soldiers down below to deal with it, so he gets Yeshua and the soldiers to deal with it.
Well, they could have. If they were only after the water, they could have gone upstream. They didn't have to.
Again, we don't know what's going on in the middle of the desert, right? We don't know that they're visually a riverbed flowing. All we know is he hits the rock over there in Chorev, and out comes water in Refidim. It's a
It could be underground spring. It could be, we have no idea. All we know is now that the people have water. And whatever the people have water, a Moloch will come to take it away.
So then you can't blame them for waging a war now because...
Well, I mean, it doesn't belong to them.
Water.
It doesn't belong to them, but okay. You know, they kill people because it doesn't... That, you want the water that they have. It's not particularly nice.
Yeah.
But
in the desert, everyone's killing over water.
I understand what they came for. They came for water. There's no sense of asher karcha baderach, but it happened along the way.
Uh-huh, so
this was very intentional.
Yeah.
And Moshe says to Yeshua, go and fight them. There's a war. Yilachem b'malek. There's no war here. Ta'if yageh. And this war is fought by the staff, by God's battle. Except that it doesn't end in victory. God can't have a battle that doesn't end in victory. That would be like Yetziat Mitzrayim ending in a teiku, in a draw. Right? It doesn't work that way. And so there's an unfinished score to settle between Amalek and God. Correct. And therefore, Mecho Emched, Zechar Amalek Mitachat HaShemayim, Lo Tishkach, I'll deal with Amalek. You watch. And not only do you watch, you're going to write it down so that when we finally deal with Amalek, you have proof. Is this clear? So, what do I have? So now that I've given you this, okay, now I can give you this. I didn't want to give this to you before because I sort of charted this all out and figured you'd better off working it through. But these two stories are so contradictory. They present such a different perspective that it's one of the classic examples that is used by biblical critics to suggest that two different authors. Classic. Anytime you have a contradiction like this in Tanakh, the biblical critics get on board and they say, oh, Deuteronomy is one author, Exodus is a different author, we're into the documentary hypothesis, resolve the problem by telling the same story from two different authors, that each one had a different version of the story. There's another variation, certainly not of biblical criticism, there's a variation of the approach within the context of Jewish scholarship and Frum scholarship, which is, of course, the perspective of Mordechai Breuer, which is the notion of what we call shtei bechinot. Very often the Torah will tell the same story from two completely different vantage points, as if they're told two different stories, because it wants to highlight different aspects. It's called the shitata bechinot. It's virtually a seamless answer to every contradiction of the biblical critics. There are Mefarshim who suggest that because of these contradictions that they're not describing the same event and that there are in fact two different wars with Amalek. There was the war with Amalek and Sefer Shemaz, and then at some point in the desert Amalek came back to us and fought us again in a different format. And then in Sefer Devarim the reference is to that second battle. Again, we have no record of such a battle other than the reference in Devarim. And so we have a problem, and it's the contradiction of these two perspectives that we need to understand. Just to give you a couple of to put into perspective some of the classic issues related to this parsha, take a look, for example, at the Ramban. Ramban, source number one, offers two explanations for the chet of Amalek. The tam ha'onesh shenenash Amalek yoter mikol ha'amim. Why was Amalek punished more than any other nation? Bavor ki kol ha'amim shamu vayirgazun. All of the other nations, to borrow the phrase from Shirat Hayam, they heard of Yetziat Mitzrayim and they were frightened. Pleshet, Edom, Moab, Yoshve, Knan, Namog, they all melted away. No nation was prepared to fight against Israel after Yetziat Mitzrayim and Kriyat Yamsuf. The Tipol Olema Mata Vafachar, as we say in Shirat Hayam, no nation in the world at that time
was prepared to lift a finger against Israel. Yifnei pachad Hashem u'miyadar gono. Va'amalek ba'a nimerchak. Ki mitgaber al Hashem. Amalek came from afar, as if to wage war against God. V'lachein amar bo v'lo yarei alokim. That's why it says, of Amalek, v'lo yarei alokim. They did not fear God. They had no problem fighting Israel, or fighting God. That is a similar approach to Rashi in source 3, Asher Karcha Baderech. Again, there's a little bit of a chant going on because they're taking sources from Devarim and interpreting the story in Shmos, which we'll explain in a moment. But if you look at Rashi in source 3, Asher Karcha Baderech, Lashon Mikre, the problem with Lashon Mikre is that it doesn't seem to fit, doesn't shtim with the description in Sefer Shmot. And so he offers a different interpretation. Davar Acher, Lashon Keri V'tuma, that's a separate issue. I'm looking at the third interpretation. Davar Acher, Lashon Kor V'chom, Tzinincha, Hivshircha, Meritichatcha. He cooled you off from your being boiling water. Shayukol Amot Yireim Li Lachem V'chem Uba Zeh V'itchil V'her'a Makom L'achemim. Mashal Lam Bati Rotachat. שאין כל בריאה יכולה לרדת בתוכה. בא בן בליעל אחד קפץ וירד לתוכה, אף על פי שנכווה, הקרא אותה בפני האחרים. Famous משל of the bath full of boiling water. Nobody wants to go in, it's too hot to touch. Comes along Amalek, בן בליעל, jumps in, burns himself, but at the same time cools off the rest of the water, and now it's open season. That fits. That fits the picture of an intentional attack designed to counter Yetziat Mitzrayim, to counter Kriyat Yamsuf, to counter God's influence. The problem with Rashi is that he's interpreting the word karcha. Karcha means happen to go along the way. That doesn't work. And so he comes up with a chiddush. Which it's the Medrash actually that suggests a way of shimming the two together, that this karcha doesn't mean who happened along the way; it means who cooled you off along the way. Right. Which works with this story. Again, it's a way of addressing the contradiction in the way of drash. The pshat of it is two different stories. We'll talk about that in a minute, but. That's where Rashi's coming from. That's where the Ramban is coming from. The Ramban doesn't use the word karcha, but he does say the same thing. All the nations were afraid to touch Israel because of a fear of God. Pachad Hashem mi'adar kvod gono. Comes along Amalek and fights. And then the Ramban offers a second interpretation. The od. Ki hu nin Esav, the karov lanu. This Amalek is a great-grandson of Esav, over mit aber al riv lolo, got involved in a fight that didn't belong to him. Meaning, if I had to, again, it comes back to the question of the nature of the chait. Is the nature of the chait theological? Is fighting God, fighting God's people, fighting Yetziat Mitzrayim? Or is the nature of the chait sociological? He had no business with us. He had no fight with us. He had no reason to start up with us. So, nomadic tribe. What does a nomadic tribe, the descendant from Esav, have anything to do with fighting a war with Israel? Israel is a major group of tribes that came out of Egypt. They have no business with Amalek. They're not in Amalek's land. They're not in Amalek's area. They're not in Amalek's territory. They have no business with Amalek. They're going around there. It's the land of Amalek. Amalek came and fought for us for no reason. They kind of entered into the picture just to be able to shtuch it to us. In other words, what's the difference between the two answers of the two interpretations of the Ramban? What is the nature of the chait of Amalek according to these two answers?
The first one's a fight against Hashem, the second one against the people.
In other words, what is the Ramban doing?
He's
drawing from either this story. He says, okay, either this is the explanation for the chait of Amalek, or this is the explanation for the chait of Amalek. But I have two different perspectives here. And I have to recognize and value and respect the fact that I have different perspectives. And how we stem them together is going to be our task, B'ezrat Hashem, next week. I'll show you another point of this dichotomy. The phrase V'lo Yirei Elokim, talked about that, right? This phrase V'lo Yirei Elokim, which seems to be out of place. Why is it out of place? Why is this phrase out of place?
Transgression was that they weren't fighting with God, they were fighting other people.
The Le'er El-Akim to describe Amalek's behavior would fit if it was where?
In the first thing.
If it was here. Amalek did not fear God, clearly. And Amalek took advantage of that. The Le'er El-Akim. Right? Le'er El-Akim belongs here. On the other hand, it happens to be here. And everything else in this parak is describing Amalek as a chet of ben adam l'chavero, as a moral chet. There's a morality there. There's not a, who said before, why can you blame them? It came for water. Okay? It's not a, they're not fighting over water, albeit God's water, they're fighting over, it's the morality, the immoral here.
They must have known that Hashem saved Bnei Israel. That was common knowledge at that point. Yes.
Here, it doesn't say anything of the sort. Except for the phrase V'lo Yirei Elokim. So look at the sources in the box in the bottom of the page, and you'll see, I line them up. On the right-hand side is a host of Mefarshim, Mechilta, and the Sifrei, that all suggest that you have to parse this verse. V'ata ayef v'yagea v'lo yareh Elokim doesn't mean you were tired and Amalek did not fear God. But it means, take a look. V'yavo Amalek v'blozo amadi omer v'yavo Amalek v'shaya Amalek nichnas tachat kanfei anan v'gonev nefashot v'Yisrael v'hargan shnema shekarcha b'derech. Right, they didn't fear God because they entered into the canopy of the Anan to steal the weak and the stragglers. We'll talk about that issue another time. Acherim omrim v'lo yirei Elokim elu Yisrael shelo hayu b'yadam mitzvot. Why is lo yirei Elokim referring here to Israel, not to Amalek? You deserved it. You didn't have mitzvot. Why did you deserve it? So, or look at the Sifrei. They didn't fear God. You were tired. You did not fear God, and therefore you were punished. What is the all of these midrashim are trying to place on the shoulders of Bnei Yisrael and not Amalek, precisely because if it refers to Amalek, it doesn't fit. On the other hand, flip to the other side, and you have the Sifrei, and you have Rashi, and you have the Ibn Ezra, and you have everybody else who says V'lo Yirei Elokim is referring to Amalek. Mm-hmm. And I have a verse at a place. This verse belongs over here. So I'm not one to cut and paste, at least not in the text of Tanakh. At least not actually. Right? I might do it figuratively. What's the answer to the mysterious V'lo Yirei Elokim phrase? The answer is that we need to understand what Yirat Elokim means in Tanakh, in Chumash. Mm-hmm. Yirat Elokim in Chumash is different than Yirat Elokim in the language of Chazal. In the language of Chazal, Yirat Elokim means God-fearing in the sense of religious. In the language of Tanakh, Yirat Elokim means God-fearing in terms of morality. And that's very consistent. It goes all the way back to Abraham. If you turn the page over, I gave you a host of examples where Yirat Elokim is referred to as a moral issue. Vayomer Avraham, by Avraham confronting Paro, and he says, Ki amarti rak en yirat elokim b'makom hazeh v'haraguni al devar ishti. This is not a God-fearing place. Therefore, they would kill me and take my wife. Or a host of mitzvot of the Torah that are all ben adam l'chavero, that by all...
Yosef.
Excuse me?
You missed the one by Yosef.
By Yosef, it's
and
like...
And
the mialdot. Mialdot of... I give a sample example. There's scores of examples. The phrase Yirat Elokim in Tanakh is a moral phrase. It refers to a sense of morality, decency among people. It's not the same phrase that Chazal use in the language of Chazal. And therefore, it fits actually in the context here. Because they attack the weak, because they attract the stacklers, because you were tired and defenseless, therefore their behavior is not God-fearing, meaning their behavior is immoral. And everything in this side of the board points to a moral degradation, a moral scar of Amalek as a baseless, valueless people who will take advantage and feed off the weak and the stragglers and attack the defenseless from behind. And everything here speaks of a tribe who saw the water miraculously occur, and in the aftermath of Yetziat Mitzrayim had no problem with saying, I don't care if this water comes from God, and it comes from the staff of God, and it comes from Kriyat Yamsuf itself. They will fight against Bnei Israel, they'll fight for the water, but they'll fight against God. And therefore, this is a battle of God against them. So I have two completely contradictory pictures of who Amalek is. Now that we have sufficiently identified the problem, as Rav Hashem next week, the goal is to find the Kasav Ashlishi and Machriya Beneh. The goal is to find some third option to resolve the contradiction between these two.
A lot of things happen in 40 years.
So there are those. There is a sheet in the Mefarshim that there's a third battle, but there's a reference here to a battle that's not recorded. Just suggesting, remember, there's a change of perspective in 40 years, but that's true if you're talking about Moshe and Israel. It's hard to say that's true about God.
So, no, of course not.
Yeah, so that's since this is a mitzvah of the Torah, we need to understand this mitzvah. That's our agenda for tonight. Bezrat Hashem next week. Part two is the resolution of these two. For that, we're going to have to learn a third paragraph.
Thank you.
No problem.